Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Happy Thanksgiving. Yes, it's here. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you? Are you okay? Is it all right? Did you get stuck in the snow? Is everything snowed in? Is it cozy at the house? Is it horrible at the house? Is there chaos at the house? Is somebody already drinking? Is somebody already drunk? Is somebody already yelling? Did somebody fuck up the potatoes? What's going on there? What's going on in there? I've got to go outside. I've got to get out. I recommend this every Thanksgiving. Look, this might be the time. If you just turn this on and you're in the house and it's after dinner, or maybe it's before dinner, whatever's going on for you right now, maybe it's time to take a walk, even if it's snowing. Take the dog, put your boots on. Did you bring the boots? No? Is there any at the house? Put the warm sweater, the warm shirt. I'm in Florida. I'm on the 28th floor. I'm looking out at the ocean. I got an ocean view. This is what I need to do for myself now that I can afford to do it, as opposed to sleep at my mother's house. It's great. My point when I got into this was that I kind of wish I was someplace cold so I could wear the hat and the gloves and the scarf and the three shirts and the sweater and the jacket and the boots and maybe some long johns. Maybe there's a stove involved. All I'm saying, God damn it, for your own sanity, get out of the house. Take a walk. Take a breath. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do about them. They're not going to change their mind. They're fucked up. They've brain fucked themselves on purpose. And the deed is done. Just do me a favor. Like, no matter how pissed off you are or how frustrated you are, how sad you are or how depressed you are. Look, if you're home, if you're alone on Thanksgiving, just be grateful. You know, I mean, don't get all, you know, depressed. Oh, my God. Just have an easy, nice meal. I mean, The Irishman's on Netflix, I think, as of yesterday. And, you know, don't make a phone call, text a friend, but don't freak out. You know, there's nothing wrong with being alone on Thanksgiving. Consider it a reprieve, a gift. But look, Keith Wager is on the show. Now, Keith Wager, there's no way you would know him. He's a guy I know from the Secret Society. I've known him for years. He's a funny guy, nice guy. Deep guy, been through some shit. He's got a podcast out, and you know, he wanted me to be on it. I have not been on it because I don't think I do not think it got fucked up enough for me to be on it. His podcast is called It's All Bad, and it's basically these guys. Keith's been sober a long time. You know, he did jail time, he did a lot of crank, and now he's actually in show business and he works in wardrobe. It's a very weird arc. But it was a great story. But him and his buddies, a lot of them ex-jail guys, put this podcast together where they just sit around and tell these horrendous dark stories and laugh almost all the way through it. Just like it's almost like a celebration of the darkest impulses, you know, with a certain amount of humility around it for surviving them. And also most of the guys on the show are sober. But Keith, he'd been sort of asking me to be on it. I said, you just come on mine, we'll promote it. And I haven't been on his because, frankly, I just don't know that I got fucked up enough to be honored with that. Anyway, back to the thing. Look, there's one thing I think we got to keep in mind. You take a breath, all right? Look, I'm at my mother's, you know, and many of you have been down here with me for years. We've done this. I do all the cooking. My brother flew in with his kid, so my brother and his kid are here, and he's working over at my mom's house. I'm here doing this, and so we're reconnecting. I think that it's important to reconnect with the family members that you don't see very much, that you should reconnect with. Me and my brother have you sort of made it a point to be closer recently. And I think that's important, especially if you're getting old. And I'm telling you, the family members that get your goat that are politically wrong-minded, that are dangerous or evil people, that are active alcoholics, that are fucking active rageaholics, that are that the consistency of the misery that that unfolds every year. If you're still in it, figure out a way, to detach from it. And there's nothing. This is really the time. These next couple days where you're encouraged to eat your feelings. I know it's about gratitude and, whatever the history of Thanksgiving is, that's, whatever that is, whatever your family does. I think one of the reasons why we all sort of get through it is because you go back, you're with family that drives you crazy. This is the day you eat your feelings. Eat them all. Just like, pie yourself to death. Stuffing yourself to death. Actually, this year, I'm going to tell you something. I encourage actively getting into it with your politically wrong-minded family. Just get into it. Fuck it. Because if you think about it, this might be the death throes between now and next Thanksgiving, or just shy of next Thanksgiving. The Democratic experiment could be over. So depending what happens early November next year, next Thanksgiving, we could be in a strongman world and a relatively authoritarian American experiment as that unfolds because of the voluntarily brain-fucked people who have chosen to close their minds off to any barometer of truth or fact for team sports in the name of minority rule and almost complete corruption. So this might be it. This might be the last Thanksgiving. And whether it's illusory or not, or whether it's partial or not, of a relatively tolerant America, this might be it forever. So keep that in mind when you're being grateful for stuff, and when you're detaching politically. Maybe it might be time to die on that hill this Thanksgiving, and just fucking give it to him. Or take a walk. I'm either way, I don't want to get anyone in trouble. So here's what's going on in my world. I almost did not leave my house in LA to come here because Fonda was sick. So now I've been really monitoring her. My buddy Frank, who works for me, he's going over there. He's staying with her, making sure she eats and eats and eats. And hopefully she'll survive until I get home on Saturday. And then I'll start doing the subcutaneous fluids twice a week, a sort of a makeshift dialysis, and see if I can keep her around for a while. But I'm just shy of FaceTiming my cat. I'm like, it almost happened. My mother said, maybe you should FaceTime LaFonda. And I said, maybe that's a good idea. But then I'm like, am I going to ask Frank, to let me use his phone to FaceTime my cat? You know what? I might. All right, so that's happening. I'm a little more tolerant. I don't know why I'm feeling chipper this Thanksgiving, but I think between me and you, I mean, she'll find out, obviously, she's going to listen to this. But so anyways, I don't know. You guys, some of you guys know my relationship with my mother. Well, it's a very difficult one around the issue of food and weight. I was brought up by a mother whose most important priority in life is to maintain a weight of 116 pounds for an entire life. That's been her goal, and she's achieved it. But, there's a lot of pressure. I was brought up by a functioning anorexic mother, and she'll own that. So my body image issues are ridiculous and fucking paralyzing and stupid. I happen to be in pretty good shape right now, but every time I get down here, I never feel like it's quite good enough. But kind of a miracle has happened, you guys, and it's like a cloud is lifted, is that my mother, between us, apparently put on a few pounds, and she's having a hard time losing them. Now, that means that she can't take the higher ground because she's in it with us now. She's like, kind of struggling with the fight. There's no condescension. There's no judgment because, she's not in her fighting weight, and it's weighing on her, but it's giving me and my brother a reprieve. Also, my mom's boyfriend seems to become less annoying to me, which is nice because, I assume I'll snap today. I started cooking yesterday, so I'm ready to go. I'm trying a couple new things because there's a couple vegan people I did the mashed potatoes with just olive oil and garlic, salt and pepper. I made, instead of yams, I made kabocha squash in pieces with coconut oil and the garam masala. Roasted Brussels sprouts, no meat, olive oil. I might burn some string beans. And then the classic stuffing, which is definitely not vegan. And the bird. It's all going. It's all going. I think it's going to work out. But my mom's boyfriend, John, maybe it's because it got back to him that I compared him to my father. And I think that stuck in his craw. So he's in is strangely kind of chipper and behaving. But also they get older, you know, and they... I brought this up to you last year. It gets to a point where they've got about five or six stories that they tell over and over again, or they just react to things for a second, or they just kind of go blank for a little while. But he's taken it upon himself to see, he tags everything now with the phrase, it was a different time. It was a different time. No matter what he's saying, you know, like we used to go to Patty's on in New York and everybody was there. It was a different time. Yeah, there on the west side of New York, there used to be a Jewish deli and a Chinese restaurant in every corner. It's a different time. But like it's over and over again. It was a different time. It was a different time. Like literally with things like, you know, we would walk across the street when the light turned green, but a different time. It was a different time. We had a bagel that you toasted, you put butter or cream cheese on it. But that, you know, it was a different time then. It's not like that now. We used to go to the toilet on, you know, you'd sit and you'd go to the bathroom. And then you'd use toilet paper. But that was then. This is a different time. It was a different time. Everything was a different time. It's okay. It's all right. As long as he's not driving everybody crazy, I'm good. Just remember, this could be the last Thanksgiving in a democratic America. So enjoy it. Fucking eat that pie. Fucking eat that ice cream. Fucking eat that stuffing. Fuck it. Fucking give it to your fucking relatives that are fucking brainwashed, angry. You know what I'm saying. This might be it. The last free Thanksgiving. We'll see. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving. Love to the kids, to your folks, to your brothers and sisters, to your parents, to your grandparents, and to great-great-grandma. All right? Now, let's talk to Keith Wager. The podcast is called It's All Bad. It's a good story. It's a good story about jail, crystal meth, crank, and show business a little bit. It's good. It's a good Thanksgiving story. The Jerry that Keith and I are referring to a few times is our mutual friend, Jerry Stahl, the author of Permanent Midnight and several other books, who's a good friend of ours. And I just didn't want you to be out of the loop. I didn't want you to be out of the loop. All right? Enjoy. This is me and Keith Wade.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
See, this is the thing, is like, I know you from, you're open about.
Yeah, 100%.
I am too. And I got one of these, I'm open about the secret society.
Yeah.
I got one of these emails the other day about a guy telling me to shut the fuck up because of the tradition, right? And I'm like, you know, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the six, like you old timers, I called him an originalist. I'm like, it's like the Constitution. Do you know what I mean? I'm glad you're abiding by all that shit.
Yeah.
But the success rate of AA is not at the level where we can just say like, hey, you know what I mean? Let's not tell people it exists.
No, it's up for debate.
Yeah. You know, what the fuck?
I have a thing at work all the time I do. I would never do, I mean, like, you know, with you or somebody, people I know who are cool with it, like, I'm fine, but I'm at work, I tell, you know, like people start, and I go, listen, you know, I've been fucking sober a long time because I have had several, you know, instances, especially at work, where people are like, literally call me and like, hey, remember what we were talking about that day? You know, like my husband's fucking like, you know, shitting his pants.
Oh, right.
Sleeping in the fucking patio. You know what I mean? I'm like, But I, like, in a weird way, I'm carrying the message of the shit in his pants, dude.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm
you
open
are.
About it. Yeah.
No, but that's the thing is, like, I don't talk, like, I, from my understanding of that tradition, it's really about, you know, you're not supposed to be a representative. Their concern
right.
was people would be seen as representatives of the program, and if they relapse, then people are going to lose faith in the program.
Yeah.
So let them find it by other means.
Yeah.
And I'm always very clear, like, I don't represent the program. There's many ways to get sober. This is how I got sober. And the more I talk about it, I get like 3, 4, 5 emails a week from people who are literally like, you saved my fucking life.
Right.
I found a meeting. And it's like, so I started to, here's my fucking alcoholic brain though. Like that guy who wrote me that letter, I went back and forth with him. I'm like, I disagree, man. And I explained it. And now it's like, I'm so fucking resentful of him.
You won the war.
I'm forwarding the emails I get that say thank you. I found AA because of you. I'm like, and I'm just gonna keep forwarding them to that guy. Does this sound bad to you? Because like, he asked me, like I said, I defended talking about AA publicly, and he goes, "What if you're wrong?" And then I'm like, "What does that mean?" Like, and I say, "Maybe I'll relapse and die, but I still have these things."
Right.
But like, how did you? Like, I've seen you in meetings for years.
Yeah.
Initially, I was frightened of you, and that passed.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think we carried a couple of laughs. I think that was, that all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely with me and Jerry as well. You know, I'm like,
Jerry.
Your buddy, Jerry.
Saw him last night. Yeah.
Dudes, or Alan McDonnell, dudes that I can really connect with.
Because
I have, like, I'll tell you the thing I find is like, because you're like me, you enjoy laughing a lot. Alan likes to laugh. You know, and Jerry's
Alan
pretty,
McDonald?
Yeah. But like Jerry, for instance, or, you know, Mike, you've had on the show, but
Jerry's,
people like to laugh.
He's a tough laugh.
He is, but you can get him, and I can get him. And I'm like, and there's a great joy, because he's one of the great writers
great.
In this town.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, a guy that dark, there's something fucking magical about making him laugh.
Sure,
but
exactly.
I also think... correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you and I have an easier time because we laugh our way through it.
Sure. Yeah.
The people that are always serious about it and not, you know, everything's a fucking dilemma.
What, the program you mean?
Yeah. Just trying not to drink or use.
Yeah, yeah.
Those people are the ones who end up, and I'm like, I know how to be miserable. You know what I mean? It's usually with a bag of crank and a dirty Taco Bell bathroom. You know what I mean? So like, but I think that's,
But so there was a crew there where I was always very intimidated. Even Jerry, before we became friends, I'm like, these guys are heavy, man. These guys are hardcore dudes. You know, there's that other dude that you used to hang around. I didn't see him much. That guy, what was his name? Todd?
Yeah.
Like that, you know, he would tell stories about like fucking jail, and I'd be like, what the fuck?
But I think it's,
it took me a while to appreciate it, though. I just felt like I wasn't... there was a period there where I'm like, I am not man enough.
Right, but you have to look at our... What about our side of it? Like, this dude's a writer, this dude's a stand-up comic. Yeah. So the difference is, like, you guys had jobs, and we were on the other side going like, holy fuck, like, that dude did that and still fucked it up? You know what I mean? Like, that guy was writing on these TV shows and still fucked it up, and we all end up in the same place. So I think it's all relative, you know? It's just these different... Because Todd and I are from... pretty far east of Los Angeles, you know, and you know, the more deserty it gets, the darker it gets.
Is that true? I know, like the desert hot springs.
Exactly. That shit.
Where are you from?
I'm from Covina, which is just on the way out there, but it's also like the home to the Church of the Crystal Methodist. It's like when people started making speed, you know, all this shit.
No, I don't know.
In like 89 or 90 is when people... In the 80s, like up into the 80s.
That's the biker crank days?
That towards the end of the biker. Yeah, it is the same thing, but a bunch of people started making it as opposed to just the bikers up till about 1990.
Yeah.
So everybody was making it. So in turn, you have like, it's really fucked up. I mean, it devastated everywhere.
Out there?
Yeah.
But like it devastated it in the same way, like not in the same way dope did or opioids.
No.
Because people are up and doing things.
Yeah, people are like, there's a lot of houses getting cleaned and carburetors getting rebuilt. And you don't die from speed, you know, unless you like fall asleep at the wheel or something.
But things start falling out.
Yeah. Teeth.
Yeah, hair.
One time I went to this house, I knocked on the, dude. Our friend's girlfriend called crying. It's drugs are fucked up.
What age is this?
I was probably 22, and I'm in Covina, and this dude lived in San Dimas. But it's like 3 in the morning. His girlfriend pages us. It was that long ago.
Yeah.
Like, you got to come help. She's crying and shit. I'm thinking like dude's dying or something. So we run out there, and he's in the – it's 2 or 3 in the morning. He's got a lawnmower with mag lights taped to it, and he's trying to start it to mow the lawn in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know, 2 or 3. And I'm like, what the fuck? And finally he gets it started. Him and the neighbor came out.
They're both
and
jacked.
And helped him. Yeah. And then he starts blowing out. She's crying because he's blowing it.
Yeah.
And I start talking to that dude, me and my friend Matt. And I swear to you, Mark, he's like, he turns and he starts saying something. And just like slow motion, a tooth flies out of his mouth at us. And we were like, both of us like, whoa, like dodging the tooth, you know? And like, and then, you know, the three of us are looking for the tooth. He kind of sticks it back in there and then finds like a piece of gum. And it was a fucking nightmare. I swear.
Well, this is like, these are the stories on that podcast. That's the funny thing about the podcast. It's all bad.
It's all bad. Yeah.
Like I listened to the first few and I'm like, it's like stories in AA without the shame or apology or I fucked up part. It's just like dudes celebrating the worst fucking stories about jail and drugs without any sort of like, did you do the wrong thing? No, man, we didn't get caught. We're good. It's funny. I wonder, I didn't know, like, when you were asking me to help you out or promote it, I was like, I don't know how to push it to people I wonder about the kind of humor that we have from being in those rooms.
Yeah.
You know, will translate to regular
humans.
People. Humans, yeah. To humans, you know, the decent people with a fucking full range of ethical behavior.
I think it does, not to everyone. You know what I mean? Like, I've told my mom, like, don't listen to it. You know,
you
like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, but I think it's kind of like what you were talking about, the opiates. I'm watching, you know, I've been watching so many people die the last few years because of the opiate.
Like people who, you know, who come in and go out.
Yeah, come in and go out. But I'm like, so I think the stories are good just because, like, none of those stories ever end on a high note.
Right.
You know, like, I wish it was like, hey, I was smoking speed and I ended up on fucking Glow with Marc Maron. That didn't fucking happen. You know what I mean? Like on a yacht with P. Diddy. Yep. None of that happened.
It's not painting it in a romantic, it's not romanticized.
No, because at the end of every one of those stories, I think I'm like, fuck, we are broke. Like, can't put a down payment on a donut, bro.
Yeah.
You know, you're
I think
relieved.
I listened to the one where you thought the guy was dead and you left him.
Yeah.
Or I don't know who it was. Was that
Anton.
You?
Anton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he didn't die. But the fucked up thing is, like, they decided it was the right thing to get out.
To get him out.
Yeah.
It was fucked up.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's kind of a lesson learned, like, to these young dudes doing dope, like, it's every man for himself when you go out.
Well, that's always the scariest thing about knowing, you know, dudes who I've known who have OD'd is, like, you know, there was at least two other people in that room when you right?
It's not funny, but it's true. Yeah.
It's so
fuck,
true.
It's true.
Like,
yeah.
As soon as someone turns blue, people are like, how well you know this guy?
Does he have any money?
Yeah, I don't know. Check his pockets. Let's get out of here. Exactly. Life is for the living.
Yeah.
but it is like, it is great. It's great how it's like listening to pirates laugh. Yeah. But somehow, like, how long are you sober now?
21 years.
Yeah, I got 20. But like, you're somehow ended up in show business.
Yeah. My friends call it Folsom to fashion.
Folsom.
I was like, because I didn't get that drug diversion thing because I was doing speed. So you know what I mean? Like I was getting arrested a lot. And
but you're a wardrobe guy.
I'm a wardrobe guy, yeah.
And you're the main wardrobe guy?
Yeah, yeah.
For films, TV?
I do almost all commercials.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah. I've done a couple of pilots and stuff like that, but almost all commercials.
But okay, so let's start at the beginning. You're in Covina.
Yeah.
And what is your dad involved in the criminal enterprises?
No, I forgot. I should have told you that.
What?
I just found out who my dad was about 2 months ago through that 23andMe thing.
You did?
Yeah.
You just,
I've.
What do you mean? Who'd you grow up with?
Well, no, but okay. The guy that we thought was my dad, well, I guess we thought, you know,
me and my mom. Oh, okay.
He died in 1970, so I was a baby.
Yeah.
So I never knew him. But
your mom thought it was your dad too?
Yeah.
So your mom was.
Yeah. What? Well, apparently, go ahead.
No. I don't know what was going on with your mom.
No. So, okay. My mom had this, was dating this dude. And
in the 60s.
Yeah. In 69.
Was she a groovy person?
Yeah, but not like a drug groovy person. You know, just like a visual hippie, like Dragnet or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they did drugs or anything. But so she was dating, but apparently they broke up. Because I think the guy we thought was my dad got sent to Vietnam.
Oh.
And then she dated this other dude, a cop, ironically.
Yeah.
Briefly. And then the Vietnam dude came back. They got back together. He ended up dying in a bar fight.
The Vietnam dude.
Yeah, and this is in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, where I was born. Oh, but
boy, it just went from bad to worse.
Yeah.
Jacksonville and then Covina. Yeah. You didn't have a shot. There's no winning.
No shit. Yeah. Dude, that's what I was like, fuck, how'd I make it out of anywhere? Yeah, you know, like, it's not like I went from Jacksonville Beach to, you know, fucking, you yeah. know, Hollywood, California or whatever. It's didn't right quite, to the suburbs.
Just stop short. Yeah. yeah. So the Vietnam vet guy dies in a bar fight.
Dies in a bar fight. And I did that 23andMe
and that
shit.
Was, you thought he was your dad.
Yeah,
but you didn't know.
I didn't really know him because he died when I was a baby.
Okay.
And I didn't know anybody on his side of the family, which is odd.
Like, and your mom didn't either?
No, I don't think so.
And she's still around?
She's still around. She lives here.
Okay. So it was just a bad memory for her.
But
yeah,
she didn't know. So I'm like, I'm in Vegas doing this. I'm doing this commercial. It's all with a bunch of like ball players like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And I get a thing from the 23andMe thing. And it's like, hey, this says we're, I just say, hey, this said we have the same dad. I'd love to chat about it. And I'm like, I sent it to my wife. And I'm like, it's spam or whatever, right? Right. This dude's dead. So I sent it to my wife, and my wife goes, did you call him? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, so I send my number back, and I'm literally still thinking it's spam. And then when the phone rings, it's a 904 area code, which is Jacksonville Beach, Florida. Yeah. You know, Jacksonville, Florida. And I see it, I'm like, holy shit. And meanwhile, I have like two of the Lakers coming onto the court. You know, I mean, like, fuck, I take it.
Yeah.
And I'm like trying to watch, and all of a sudden I start talking to this dude. And we're talking, I'm like, where do you live? He's like, he's 15 years younger than me.
Yeah.
But he lives in Jacksonville Beach. I'm like, what high school did your dad go to? He's like, Fletcher. I'm like, fuck, so did my mom, right?
Right.
And then we're talking back and forth. And I said, and it's just all kind of lining up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's he like? He goes, he's a cop. You know, I'm like, is he cool? He goes, he's cool, but he's a cop. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay. So then I'm like, I hang up and I call my mom, and I'm the whole time I'm trying to like, keep an eye on.
Did you fuck a cop?
Yeah.
In Jacksonville before you came to Covina? You said that?
No. That'd be fucking amazing. So I call her and I'm like, are you sitting down? She goes, yeah. This is how fucking random it was, yeah. Mark. I go, hey, you know a guy named Mitch Kinsey? She goes, yeah, I dated him in high school. Literally like no big fucking deal. Right, I go, well, that's my dad. And then she starts crying. And then I'm like, well, you know what? It's all good. Because it kind of did close a lot of doors. I've always felt different not having a dad, the whole thing. And I'm like, well, shit. Okay. So now I'm, you know, 49 years old. Now I have a dad.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, fuck, all right.
And he's still around.
Yeah. I went down and met them.
You did?
Oh, yeah. Dude, it was fucking wild. Yeah.
Do you look like him?
I do somewhat. He's a kind of a bear of a man, though. Yeah. He's big and big hands and shit.
Yeah.
Dude, get this.
Yeah.
He's... I'm talking to them about, they're like, yeah, well, he was a motorcycle cop in Jacksonville, blah, blah, blah. And they go, literally, this is my siblings. Matter of factly, they're like, yeah, I go, oh, so I have a brother named Gator. Yeah. It's his nickname. Obviously. Yeah. I go,
the younger one?
That's Mitch. I have a brother who's like 3 years younger named Gator. I go, why do they call him Gator? I swear, they acted like this was the most normal thing. They go, oh, because dad wrestles gators when they wander into people's yards. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? And they start sending me pictures of it. And I'm like, what? And it's him.
You're dead.
Yes.
Wrestling gators.
Yeah. Like
with your brother?
No, just him.
Oh.
But for some reason, that made them name
the kid
his
gator?
Son.
And that's your half-brother?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got this half-brother and you got a younger brother?
Two half-brothers, two half-sisters.
And they're all younger?
Yeah. They're all younger. Oh, that's another weird thing. The closest in age to me is like a year and a half younger, Celeste, my sister Celeste. And... you know, nobody in Northern Florida had the name Celeste in the 70s. But then we realized we both had best friends that were brother and sister. So we played together as kids in the 70s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we knew each other.
So was your mom just trying to hide this?
No, I don't think she knew. I think, or she was just focused on...
The timing had to be kind of weird.
That's what I think.
But was she in high school when she got pregnant?
She was, that's a good question. She was 18 when she got pregnant.
Something, yeah. So, and then she met a dude.
Right.
With the you in there already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there was a break in the dude she thought was my dad. She had a fling with this dude. Oh, ended up pregnant.
I get it.
But.
Yeah.
It's all kind of for debate. You know what I mean?
But the siblings look kind of like you? Like you feel, did you feel like it's, you know.
Yeah. The oldest sister, especially, and she talks more than I do, if you can fucking
believe
that.
Drug addicts?
Yeah.
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 Really?
One of them, yeah.
So now you can track that too?
And yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. It's fucking, it was fucking.
Did it make you feel better?
Yeah. It actually, it closed a lot of doors for me. Cause like I told, it could be booze, chocolate chip cookies. I'll get addicted to anything but fucking exercise. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm trying to do the exercise.
Yeah. Always like, trying to fill that void, you know, when I'm not spiritually aligned. So, but it did make me feel a lot, brother. They're great people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we have different political views, but I don't really give a shit. You know what I mean?
Well, it's not like you got to go there for Thanksgiving.
Right.
Kind of a one-off. Glad we did this. I'm out.
Exactly.
Good luck with everything.
Dude, I had some pretty funny conversations with them. Because to me, politics are team sports. You know what I mean? Like,
sadly, that's true.
Yeah. I'm like, if Dog the Bounty Hunter ran against Donald Trump, I feel like all the Democrats would, you know, wave, you know.
Gotta be better.
Yeah.
Gotta be better.
All right, we'll back this guy. Yeah,
Dog's fine.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll take him. Yeah, exactly.
Anything but.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a weird thing with that. I talked to a friend that used to be fairly normal, like, you know, regular kind of, you know, assumed liberal kind of person, woman. And now she's just kind of snapped somehow. And it was weird because she kept telling me, it's like, it's all game, man. It's all game for, you know, it's all about money, both sides. And I'm like, okay. But then she's sort of like, but there's no climate change. I'm like, you know what? Okay, if it's all a game, sounds like you're picking a side. Yeah. You know, why that side?
Yeah, exactly.
Weirdo. Well, you get like, I think it's a lot of sensitive people who are pro, like, victims can go either way.
Yeah.
You know, either they embrace it and they figure out how to, you know, they don't handle it in the way that they need taken care of, or they become fucking like just bullies.
Yeah.
You know what
100%.
I mean? Like, and it's broken people, man.
Yeah. My dad literally, because my dad voted for him, but my dad.
Gator? Said, or the Gator's dad?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah.
He voted for him and I was like, and I kind of just jam, you know, like I do. I'm like, you know, I understand, you know, like you don't want to vote for Dem, but I have a hard time understanding why you vote for that dude. And he literally goes, and he's a Christian and everything. Goes, Keith, I hate him as a person.
Yeah.
I go, well, he certainly doesn't bring anything to the fucking table politically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Outside of taking people's rights away and shit. Yeah. And like, but that's the thing. I was talking to a Teamster I work with and he was like, dude, I couldn't even believe, and he grew up an actor. He's born and raised in Hollywood, Mexican dude. And he goes, I just wanted somebody who wasn't a politician. I'm like, that dude's been famous for no reason since 1982. He's the ultimate fucking politician. You know what I mean? Like,
right. That's interesting.
It's wild.
Yeah. It's complete hustle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when do you get to Covina? How old are you?
I own a skateboard shop there. Oh, when did I move there? 1982 when I was 12.
Oh, that's when you left Florida?
Yeah.
Now, when did the drugs start?
The drugs started about 80, well, booze started in 80, booze and weed, I guess, started in 84, 85.
Yeah.
I would do, you know, like booger sugar and shit if you had it. You know, I was too young to really get it together. But I remember doing like coke once and then speed once.
When you were like 12 or 11?
No, like 14, 13.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, yeah.
When I was 15,
Black
I ate
beauties.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I took a lot of LSD when I was 50. That's the only drug that never gave me a bad shake.
What?
LSD.
Oh, yeah?
It was. I've been arrested twice on it, and still it was fun. You know? I'm not like...
In Covina?
Yeah.
You're tripping in Covina?
Yeah.
By yourself or with people?
Well, when I got arrested, I was in a jail with a bunch of people I didn't know. But other than that...
But like really, like tripping balls full on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of them, I only started peeking as we like arrived. And I was with one of my friends, my friend Jason, and he was bummed, and I was like, better make the best of it. It's about to kick in. He was all bummed out,
right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. So you better make the best of it?
Yeah. I was like, because you know, like if it goes, my buddy had drank that Morning Glory shit. You know how LSD is. You've taken it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you take it, and it's, if you've never taken it, it's like, you're always like, this shit's bunk.
And then, what?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, my buddy was like, went to take a piss one time. And he's like, this shit's bunk. And he said when he went-
In jail?
At home, Orange County. Yeah. He went to pee. And when he looked down there, it looked like there was a hole in his ball sack. So he started trying to juggle to try to keep the balls from falling out of it. And then he came out and he's like, there's like a Nagel painting. And he said he was trying to cool it.
Yeah.
And he's like staring at the Nagel painting, concentrating. And then the Nagel painting came alive all crazy. And he's like, fuck. And he looked away and there was a ficus tree. And he said the ficus tree just like raises its hands all. I know, that chick's crazy, huh? So I didn't.
In the Nagel painting?
Yeah. like pointing at it and shit. And I'm like, I just didn't want it to go that route. You know where it goes fucking bad.
Oh, man. right. Where you don't know, you can't quite see the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between what's real and what isn't.
Yeah. You're like 3 feet to the right of yourself.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah. And you gotta sort of hold something together. And so how did you make it a good trip in the holding cell?
I just fucking, you know, I just like, cause he was bummed. Jason was like, fuck, man. And I go, dude, don't be like that. We're going to be stuck here all night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just tried to like focus on, you know what I mean? Like looking at cool shit or whatever. I mean, right. There's not a lot in there, but like, you know.
Were there other people in there?
Yeah, there's other people in the hole. There's like probably 15 or 20 of us, but I was just trying not to look at the cops, you know, right. Through that window.
Yeah.
I kept telling him, I'm like, don't look at them dudes. It's going to bum you out. You know, like, try to look at the other, like the cholos and shit or whatever. You know what I mean? I was like, fuck.
So that was that the first time you got busted?
No. The first time I got
you say that like I'm just one of those guys. Like I was seven. Yeah, you know, and they just started taking me in.
I started getting the first thing I had arrested for was ditching school. And I was probably 14. Because there was a thing in Southern California in the early 80s, if you weren't in
truancy.
Yeah, truancy. But they were really like enforcing it for a while. It was weird. And then when I started drinking daily, I'm going to say it was about 15 or 16.
Yeah.
Because when I started drinking more and like less smoking pot is when I started, like, because then, you know, like alcohol is the one where I really make the wrong decision.
Right.
Almost every time. Like I wake up and everybody's mad at me. I'm that dude.
Yeah.
And so I'd like, you know, I'd
just sad, you know, frowning faces.
Yeah. Yeah, like
disappointed frowning faces.
Yeah, like not once was it different either. Just like, fuck.
One time I went to a wedding.
Uh-huh.
And it was out of town. We'd like, have to stay at a bed and breakfast or something. And,
yeah.
You know, and everybody was sort of, it was the night after the wedding, after the party and everything. And everyone's gathering at the bed and breakfast at the breakfast table. And I'm sitting there and everyone's just kind of like looking at me with that kind of like, and looking away. I'm like, what the fuck happened? Yeah. And then the woman comes in to the room, who owns the place, and goes, whose car is on the yard? But they let me park. I don't know who, I had people in the car. They let me drive it and I parked it in the yard. But then like more things started to unfold. I'd set my arm on fire, you know. That's just
amazing though.
Oh God, it was one of those things where I got to the wedding. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. Like I had all these Ativans and I got to the wedding. I just didn't want to deal or something. I remember taking shots of scotch and I took like two or three Ativans and I just lost the whole fucking night.
Yeah.
Just, there's just bits and pieces. Then I smoked weed and it was fucking over. Then, yeah. Like I remember seeing my arm on fire at the table where we were eating
because
I'd stuck it in a candle, but then I don't know really how it happened. And the car was in the yard.
Yeah.
But hey, no one was dead. No one was dead.
Like, except your reputation.
It's just like to know that you were that embarrassing. You know, like I was married at the time to my first wife and she was embarrassed. And I'm like, God, what the fuck? Someone should have stopped me.
I was a bridge burner too. I was like, I remember one time we were all fucked up at this bar or whatever. And we go back to this, I don't know. Well, I was like you are. Yeah. Like I remembered playing pool at some point, but I woke up and had no fucking idea. Kind of like yours. Yeah. I woke up and I didn't know where I was, but this was fucked up because I wake up and I'm like on the floor.
Yeah.
And there's like really long, like shag carpet. And this is in like the early 90s. Yeah. So it's, you know.
Yeah.
Like I wake up and I'm like, fuck, this is like long carpet. So I get up and I'm like, and the bedroom I'm in doesn't look familiar. So I look out the back window and I'm like, fuck. You know, I'm like, where am I? I could see like a hillside.
Yeah.
And so then I open the door and I can hear people talking down the end of the hall. But, you know, it's like, I'm like, fuck, you know, everybody's always mad at me when I am like this. Right. So I'm like, shit, I'm trying to think of who's going to be mad. Am I going to get yelled at?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, so I'm waiting it out. I mean, for like four, I have a terrible hangover. I'm like, fuck. And then I open the door again and I can hear people talking. And then I'm like, fuck it. So I start sneaking out and I'm looking at the family photos in the hallway, trying to identify.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Is that Mark as a kid? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like right. Trying to picture that shit. Yeah. Like
anyone, is it anyone I know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, so finally it wasn't. And I'm like, fuck it. So I'm like, whew. So I just walk down and I'm just thinking somebody's mom or something is going to, and I'm like in fucking La Habra or somewhere in like Orange County. And right when I get to the end of the hallway, it's my friend Lori and this dude just sitting there at the ends of two couches with a dial phone.
Yeah.
And right when I end, they both look up with giant pupils like, you know where to get any blow? I'm like, no, but is anybody mad at me? You know what I mean? I'm like, fuck, it's like 8 a.m. I'm like, I got to get home.
That is just the worst where people are looking for blow at 8 a.m.
It's
there's
the
never,
worst.
No, it's never a good moment.
No.
Come, we're still going.
Yeah. Still, and you're always, whenever you get in that position, it's always with the dude you like the least.
Yeah. And, you know, and then the day is fucked and you're just kind of holding up this, you're just staying above something that you know you just dip below it. It's going to be like, oh, my entire week's fucked up. It's everything is fucked. So, okay. So you're getting arrested for truancy and then like, because like, I want to get to this, like, when did you own a surfboard shop?
Oh, I own a skateboard shop, but I've, I own, it's called the Pawn Shop and it's a, it was a, called the Outhouse Surf and Skate in the 70s and 80s and 90s.
In then. Covina?
Yeah. And then we opened one about 10 years ago.
It's still open?
Yeah. It doesn't make any money, but it's good for the kids and shit. Like, it's never profited.
But when do you get in real trouble?
When I get in real trouble was when the speed thing came. So basically, all right.
Yeah.
I'm no conspiracy theorist, but just hear me out. So there's a 7-Eleven where you could drive through, this is in the 80s and 90s.
In Covina.
Yeah, and buy weed. Like anybody could, just drive through. And some guy came through there one day and asked, these two dudes are selling weed. He bought weed from me. He goes, hey, you guys like speed? I'll show you how to make it. So this guy started, he showed these two dudes how to make it.
Right? Kids?
Yeah, they're, well, 19, 20.
Yeah.
And the guy was about 35.
Yeah.
He taught this guy Richie and this guy Nick, he taught them how to make it.
Yeah.
And then they were trying to be secretive about it, you know?
Yeah.
And he would encourage him, like, no, show fucking your friends. It'll take the heat off of us. This kind of shit.
Yeah.
So they show, like, this other two dudes. And then these other two dudes.
How to make bathtub crank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, it, I'm telling you, Mark, it went, I mean, the timeline, to me, it seemed like in 6 months everybody was making it. It was probably about 2 or 3 years. But I'm talking, like, it was, there was so many people making it that they raided that house and the house behind it and caught both people making it. At the same time.
Yeah.
And
so what's the conspiracy?
Well, the conspiracy, here's the, one day we were standing in front of there.
In where, the 7-Eleven?
No, the house where they're making it. And I saw the guy who taught him how to make it. And granted, I was fucking spun like a research monkey, but I was like, I looked at that dude and I looked at a friend of ours, I think you know him too, but I looked at Jimmy and I go, who fucking knows that dude, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, who? I can't remember. They called him the Mathiah. I'm not even kidding you.
He goes, Mathiah.
He goes, the Mathiah? He's cool. I go, that's not what I'm asking. I go,
where'd he come from?
Yeah, we all went to high school and junior high together. You know, Rich dates Nick's sister, all this. I go, where did that motherfucker come from? Because he's fucking ruined everything. Every mom's like vacuuming at 3 a.m. You know what I mean? The whole fucking neighborhood's awake 9 months out of the year. It was fucked. And that guy caused it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it just went from there, you know?
And did anyone find out? Oh, do you know who that guy was?
I never found out, but
he wasn't from there?
No.
Wild. He just came in like a devil and just undermined the entire social fabric of the town.
Yes, I'm telling you, dude. In you, like, one time I was like in a Lucky Market, you know, it's like a Vons or whatever.
Yeah.
And the dude, this I didn't really know much about it. I knew people were doing it, but the guy in front of me is buying probably like 60 boxes of Sudafed,
right?
And it was the only thing on the fucking conveyor belt is 60 boxes of Sudafed and a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like,
got a bad cold.
Yeah.
you're going to ride it out.
And he's, but the whole fuck, everything was like that. People trying to buy pills and make that shit. And
you never made it?
I would help people make it. You know, I didn't physically make it, but I like, I think I've told you this before, but I would have the job of keeping everybody awake.
Yeah.
You know, because people start like, and my friend Diane would be like in the back bedroom cooking it. And so she'd have a flask and this shit set up, right?
Yeah.
And then this other guy, this after I got out of prison, it was a different thing of distilling it, which is after somebody's done making it, you give it to this person to distill it, which I, you know, it was like another thing with condensers. I don't really know much about chemistry, but they were doing that shit. And like, I would have to go get ice and you know what I mean? And like get food or whatever. And then, cause we'd be there for days at a time.
Right.
And it would usually be a random house, like in Ontario or fucking, you know, Corona or whatever.
Yeah.
And this house in particular was in Ontario on a street called Tam O'Shanter. That's the name of the street.
Yeah.
Which the only reason that's because I'm like, who in the fuck names the street Tam O'Shanter?
Yeah.
But I had been at that house before I went to prison and she picked me up there. And then when I got out of prison a year and a half later, we're going there and I don't know shit about Ontario, but she goes, hey, we're going to go to this house and do it. And I, it just looked odd to me. I'd only been there once, but I go, please tell me this fucking house isn't on Tam O'Shanter. She goes, yeah, it is. I go, dude, you picked me up from here. It was fucking hot then.
Yeah.
You know, that's a year and a half ago. I'm like, we're really going to be fucked, you know? Yeah. And we're there, and my job's keeping her awake and shit, but I fell asleep, and the girl who lived there woke me up, right? And she's like, Keith, there's a fire or some shit. And I wake up. I'm sleeping on a bed, and when I open my eyes from her waking me up, it just looks like lavender smoke, you know, above me.
Yeah.
And so I sat up, you know, just out of habit. When I sat into it, not only could you not breathe, but it pulled the oxygen out of your lungs.
Oh, my God.
So it's like you couldn't.
Yeah.
And I dropped to the floor. But now the lady who lives there is fucking crawling, opening the windows. But I'm chasing her, closing the windows. We're literally arguing like army crawling through the house.
Because you don't want to get busted.
Yeah, I don't want to get busted. I'm like, turn on the fucking fans in the kitchen and the bathroom. And it was a fucking nightmare. Because those houses were close together. And it was just thick. You couldn't see through the smoke. It was a thick lavender smoke, like purple.
Ugh.
It was awful.
So, all right. So the Mathia is ruining the town.
Yeah.
And you're starting to do it.
I started doing it, and then I started selling it.
Yeah. In town.
Yeah.
But was like everybody selling it?
A lot of people were selling it, but I would sell it like, I would, because I like, you know, I run pretty high octane, so I'm like up all the time, and I just knew everybody in that town. Then I started selling it to just a handful of people in Hollywood. It was really the same crowd.
This is that yellow shit?
No, this is the glass shit.
Oh, okay.
There was, mostly the yellow shit was around,
yeah.
But that was the thing with Hollywood. Hollywood, the only thing you could find was that yellow shit.
Yeah.
You know, and where out in the San Gabriel Valley, you would have the glass, which is what everybody wanted. So
yeah.
I would sell it to this one guy who lived in Beverly Hills, and then another guy who lived in, not Beechwood Canyon, but that other one.
The glass was good because you could smoke it.
You could smoke it, yeah.
Yeah, the yellow shit was useless.
No, I don't think you could smoke that yellow shit. I can't imagine.
It was like crunchy.
Yeah, it's and like, it smelled. Do you remember
horrible,
that?
Like kerosene or something.
Yeah. It's
like
snort.
Like you snort gasoline. You could take, there was no way to just rationalize it being good in any way.
No.
Because, like, you'd snort it and be like, that's like engine shit.
You know? That stuff makes people weird, too. I walked in this house
that
one
does,
time.
There's a, really? Is there some variables? There's a spectrum of behavior on the yellow crank versus the good glass,
you
know, stuff.
Do you remember how the yellow crank would make you have like instant, like, you remember you get like sores and shit from it?
Yeah.
That was what I mean.
And I don't know if I got that far in.
I didn't do that often, you know, and that's just a case of it not being clean. But when I did do it, like, I literally felt like my hair stood up. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I walked in a house, this one woman who's like, you know, people have their thing, like cleaning the car or fucking, you know, painting the house or whatever. And
drawing a maze.
Yeah. Exactly. This one lady, her thing, she liked to clean people's ears.
Uh-huh.
And I would never fucking go near her. She had like a little kit and shit. And I had done some of that shit, and her boyfriend's this gnarly dude named Nick that we had grown up. He's older than us, but he is fucking gnarly. And I walked into this dope house one time, and this fucking dude, I could see it in his face, his head sideways like this, and she's cleaning his ears out with like little, dude, like tweezers and all these shit.
Yeah.
And he's so bummed, but he's just so scared of Nick, he won't say anything. And for probably 2.5 hours, I was just like, fuck, better him than me. It was cleaning a man's ears.
Just working his head for 2.5 hours?
Yes.
And because he was afraid of the dude?
Boyfriend. Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
But so, okay, so you're selling it. You're selling the glass. You're running down here up all night.
Going, yeah. And then I start, like, I got into a fight with a guy and he got hurt. And I got arrested for that. And then I went to the county jail I was sentenced to a year in the county jail. You do about 5 months at that time. And it's like 91.
In county?
The LA County.
Yeah. Where was that? Is that downtown?
Yeah, on Bouche Street downtown. Right by the Twin Towers, but.
Yeah, and that was your first real stretch?
Yeah. That was about 5 months. But that jail is like the Terminator. It's fucked up. It's the worst jail I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of fucked up ones, but that one's worse than any prison.
Why?
I've ever
How?
Been to. It's just fucking dirty. You know what I mean? Like, it's not taken care of. It, like, it smells like a 24-hour fitness shower. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just not a clean, it's not like an Equinox
shower.
How
did you adjust? Like, you know, being popped a bunch of times when you're a kid and not, you never went to, what was the longest time? Were you in juvenile too?
Yeah, I was in juvenile hall for about 5 months one time.
For what?
Same thing. I got in a fight and I was drunk and got in a fight and.
Oh.
Beat some guy up, and then I but that one wasn't a felony or anything. It was just, you know, what, like getting in a fight.
Because you were a kid?
Well, yeah, my mom was like, I fucking can't handle him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They probably wouldn't have sent me to jail.
So you were out of control?
Out of control, yeah. And I started, and I couldn't stop drinking. You know what I mean?
So what do you track that to? Like, do you remember the feelings?
The feelings of, I just don't feel comfortable in my own skin.
Right.
Unless I'm drinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the fighting thing, it was just, you just had to fight?
It's really, I think it's really like booze related. You know what I mean? Like, but it's like, I wouldn't, like, I've never, like, I don't think I've ever been in a fight when I wasn't drunk.
Yeah.
You know, not even when I was, like, on drugs.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
when you drink, it's like, that's why you hear, like, when you'll be in prison with a dude who looks like fucking, you know, like, Ted Koppel or something, you know, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing here? He's like, I was drunk driving and fucking killed a family. You're like,
yeah.
Because the booze is where you make the fucking really bad, terrible decisions, you know, and somebody ends up dead.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know.
But, like, when you get sent for the first time, because I didn't never get arrested.
Yeah.
But when you get sent to like a real jail,
yeah.
I mean, what's in your head? All the horror stories, like how do you fucking handle yourself? Well, day one.
Day one in juvenile hall, which I'm not gonna lie, I mean, I was fucking scared. I was like, oh shit, you know, because you just know shit like from that Sean Penn movie Bad Boys or whatever, you know. And you're young. So it's weird. There's a lot of testosterone when you're 15 to 18. And the interesting thing about it is when you're going to juvenile hall and shit, so I get there and it's like, you know, it's like majorities are you know, there's not a ton of white people in there.
Yeah.
But it's weird. People still, in the juvenile system, people gangbang. And what I mean by that is if somebody comes in, it's a Crip, a dude who's a blood might be like, where are you from, right? And they might fight right then, but it's usually over with.
Right.
Same thing with the Hispanic gangs or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But it's always over after that. It's weird because you are just kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a weird thing. And everybody kind of lives communally. And there's no racism or any of that bullshit like there is when you're an adult, you know? Like you don't have to. It's really when you're an adult and you start going is really fucked up.
Yeah.
So it's weird. There's a lot of camaraderie. Like there's no like, you know, nobody got raped or anything like that. And I've been in, you know, Los Padrinos, Central, all the ones in L.A. County. And there was no.
You were a regular?
Yeah. I was in and out of there for about, you know, I mean, I probably did maybe 15. Well, you know, I would go to juvenile hall for a few months and they'd send me to a boys home.
Yeah.
So I was in a boys home in Chino called Boys Republic, same one Steve McQueen was in.
Uh-huh.
And then I was in Boys Republic in Silver Lake, which is on Red Cliff. You know where that is? Street next to Mitchell Trena.
Oh, yeah.
That one, still there. It's a huge property. And there we went to public school. So we went to school at Marshall. This is in 1987.
Uh-huh.
And the boys' homes were almost just like group homes.
Right.
You know what I mean? The one in Chino was like its own city.
Yeah.
But the one in
didn't have a jail vibe?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But it's people from all over the state. That would be the difference.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to just the county.
Yeah.
So once, you know, I'm doing like, I'd been to camp and juvenile hall and shit. So it's weird. Once you're in there for a few days, you're not really scared because you realize like, yeah, you might have to get in a fight or something, but unless you go to like the youth authority, which is like the young prison, nobody's getting stabbed or, you know, fist fights or whatever.
Right,
but
right.
When you go to that county jail, LA County Jail, it's like, there's a fucking dorm there, Mark, that is the size of a football field. I mean, it's not quite, but it's so fucking big. When I say dorm, whatever you're picturing, it's probably fucking 10 times that size. It's so big that you can't even see to the back of it.
So what, it's like cots?
Yeah, bunk beds.
Oh.
Just three high, like the Three Stooges.
Three high bunk beds for a full football field?
Yeah, for probably a half of a football field. It's fucking enormous.
Oh my God.
Like half of a high school football
field. And it's like got that weird in jail vibe?
Yes, 100%.
All of it, like that weird frenetic kind of horror show?
Yeah, it's a fucking horror
show. I just
know
that because I did a show once at a women's prison, and we had to go through security and everything else and do all that and perform for the prisoners.
Oh.
And you just feel that whatever the community is in there, it's electric with horror.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just like, well, I don't know, it's a whole different vibe in here, man.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it.
It's like a system that you do not want to be part of.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel it, and you feel the hierarchy, and you can feel the weight of it. It's like, I was like fucking devastated.
That's a great way to explain it, and it's like, people don't realize, but even as a visitor, you want to get the fuck out, right?
Well, yeah, because you're like, you know, there's something going on in here, and it's really fucking organized, and it's really scary.
It is organized. There's, when you, like, when you're in the county jail, you know, you're just, to be honest, like, you're just like, fuck it, man, I hope I get to prison soon. You know, yeah. It's that fucked up. I mean, the food's
fucking. You just
want
to get out of there.
It's awful.
Yeah.
One time we had spaghetti.
Yeah.
And it had, we get the spaghetti and it's got bones in it. I'm like, I look at my friend, I'm like, there's fucking bones in this spaghetti. And what had happened is because the food's all like just donated. And yeah. I guess they got, I don't know if it was sardines or anchovies, but one of those. They got a bunch of those. They just fucking threw them, the whole thing's in the spaghetti.
Yeah.
You know, which it's made in like, they have pots that look like, almost like hot tubs, these big metal hot tubs. Yeah, they're huge. And then.
So that was this is a big bad memory from jail? Is the spaghetti
food,
bones?
Yeah, having to fucking fight. You know, I'm like, I'm a white dude, so we're really outnumbered, you know, but like you have to fight for your shoes because somebody's, you know what I mean? Like,
really?
If you have decent shoes, you know what I mean?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You mean shoes you come in with?
Yeah, the ones you wear. Because at that, you know, you would wear your own shoes in there.
And someone would want them.
A lot of the time. Which, to be honest with you, like, they weren't real nice shoes. They were
So you had to fight a lot.
Yeah, well, you'll have to fight for your shoes, you know, and like they might end up taking them. Like, I think I kept mine. I can't remember. They might have taken them, but I had to fight for them just to show I'm not, you know, not a coward or whatever.
Yeah.
But then you move on because you're definitely prey in the county jail if you're a white dude, you know, because the numbers are so small. You know what I mean? You're probably 6% of the population.
Right.
And there's also a lot of racial tension. So
between Mexicans
and Hispanics.
Yeah.
And then. And it's mostly the Hispanics picking on the whites, not the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. And not all of them, but the majority of them.
Uh-huh.
So then when you get to the prison, here's the... Ready for this?
Yeah.
So you can literally be on a bus with a dude who tried to take your shoes going to prison. And when you get to that prison, now you're allies with that guy.
Right.
Because...
You have a history?
No, it's just that's the system. When you get to the prison system, the southern Mexicans, so Bakersfield to San Diego, and the whites run together. Northern Mexicans and the blacks run together. So anybody above Bakersfield all the way to Crescent City, right?
Yeah.
But this is all shit kept in, you know, it's how the cops want to keep it segregated.
Yeah.
And everybody hating it. It's the only way they can control it, you know? Because if everybody united, like, I don't know if you saw in the news, they did like 2 years ago, they went on a hunger strike together and they got what the fuck they wanted. Because if they merge as a group and every prisoner goes at, the cops don't have a chance, you know?
Right. But what about the violence and the raping and all that stuff?
There, so in prison, and I mean, I've been to Chino a couple of times. I've been to Delano. I've been to Pelican Bay, which is the worst fucking prison, I think. I've been to.
Where did you have time to do anything else? Like, it sounds like this is a lot of time.
It wasn't a lot of time. I mean, I've only done my first term. I did 14 months. The second
for
time
the fighting.
Yeah, well, the fighting, and when I got caught for violating probation, I had a bunch of speed and a loaded pistol. Oh. So that was a new charge. So I got 2 years for that. And I already had 2 years for the assault prior.
Right.
So I had to do. So
they had written you off as just like a garbage person.
Sure.
Yeah. This guy's not leaving the system.
Yeah. I never got a chance to go to treatment or any of that.
Yeah.
You know, because I started with a violent crime.
Right.
If I would have started with a possession or something, maybe everything would have turned out better, you know, earlier
have
on.
Have you been able to make amends to the people that you.
I have one left.
Oh, that you a guy you beat up?
Yeah, only one.
It's not happening?
No, I'm working on it right now.
Oh, that's wow.
Just working on finding
him. At 22 years? Oh, working on finding him?
Yeah.
But you know who it is.
I can't figure out his last name, but my friend knows his cousin or something. It's pretty weird. His name's Chris, but I fucking don't know his last name.
So you've been to Chino and Pelican Bay's bad. And what were you going to tell me about the nature of it?
Oh, well. Pelican Bay is the only one where I got there in the middle of the night, so everybody's asleep, and it's like you're talking about. There's nobody awake, right?
Yeah.
Maybe four people in the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what you're talking about. We pulled in, and I was like, I had goosebumps. I'm like, it is fucking going down here. You know what I mean? I'm like, I could tell. You're like, there's motherfuckers getting killed here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You could just feel it.
Yeah.
And nobody's even awake.
Yeah.
But you could feel it the minute you pulled in the yard, right? Yeah. So in there, it becomes, you know, and it's a very weird, you know, it's a weird, you know, because you have to stick with your own race, and I'm not fucking racist, you know what I mean? Or
you just have to?
Yeah, a lot of people are in that position, you know, like there's a lot of black dudes, a lot of Mexican dudes, none of us want to fucking have to stick to ourselves, but we do.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is, and
yeah. It's
been that way, you know, I guess
forever.
Since the 50s, from my understanding.
But you're not necessarily... you don't have to be vocal or get a swastika tattoo.
No, and I'll tell you the interesting thing is, I've always said, like, Like, you don't hear, like, you know, if you hear somebody, like, dropping N-bombs or, you know, calling somebody a cracker or whatever, from my experience, they've always got something to hide.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like one time, this dude who was, like, he had the swastikas and all this shit. And I remember, I was like, this motherfucker ain't right. Yeah. There's something not right about him. Well, because he would talk so much.
Right on the surface, it's not right. But you're saying there's a deeper wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than the swastika tattoo.
You know, I'm like, he's hiding something. Uh-huh. And sure as shit, like, he paroled. Everybody, like, had this big meal for him. Like, all right, brother, all this bullshit. Yeah, yeah. And he left, and the cop had the news on and turned the TV toward, you know, in the tower.
Yeah.
And it was him, and it was like, convicted pedophile, blah, 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 got out of prison. You know, and I'm like, fuck, I knew it. You know, like.
So he was hiding that so that he wouldn't get killed in prison.
Yeah. The swastikas, the whole, you know what I mean? Loud mouth, you know, like. Because people, you know, everybody's really respectful of each other in there. And nobody, I'm not saying people don't get raped, but of all the, I mean, I probably spent, not that much, like 14 months the first time, 12 months the second time, and 6 months the third time.
Yeah.
And then that 5 months in the county, that's the total time I've done.
Yeah.
So whatever that is, like about 3 years. But nobody in any of those places I was in ever got raped. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's
to your knowledge.
To my knowledge, yeah. I mean, there's a gay culture in there.
Sure.
You know, there's quite a few, like, trans people or gay people or whatever. And they have they're in their own group or whatever, you know. And they do their own thing. But they're treated with respect as well.
Sure.
You know, it's like everybody, you all respect everybody because, you know, when there's a knife in the hand, everybody's a man. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, everybody bleeds the same.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you learn, like, it's weird. It's a really fucked up system, you know.
Sure.
And out of everybody I met, and I'm gonna say it's definitely thousands of people that I've been in prison with, literally.
Yeah.
And only two of them didn't drink or do drugs
to get in there
alcoholically. Only two. Yep.
To get into prison.
Yeah. You know, either the crime was behind it. But,
right.
I mean, it's not like they're not like a sober dude. You know.
Well, that's what I used to say when people want to get sober. I said the thing is that. It's not necessarily about, you know, the drug or the drink. It's like, you know, it just increases your odds exponentially of being in some fucked up situation out of your control. Whether you're buying the drugs, whether it's who you're hanging out with, whether you're in a car with a fucking weirdo. You don't, like, it's just, as soon as you start doing that shit, you just add a bunch of possibilities, none of them good.
Yeah.
You know, dude, getting fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I just remember being on the road and being in hotel rooms, just being like, you know, who's the guy with the eye patch?
Yeah.
Who the fuck are these people, man? Is that the guy I bought the drugs from? Did he bring people? Where's my shit? You know, and you just like, how did you get out? Oh, man.
There's always an old guy named Pops involved. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're like,
who
the fuck is Pops?
Yeah, he's in the front room.
Yeah.
Right? And then you walk back to Junior's.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fucking family affair.
Yeah, Pops told me to come back.
Yeah.
Are you Junior? Yeah, who the fuck are you? Yeah. I'm the guy buying the drugs?
Yes.
Yeah, dude. Man. So, okay, so how did you decide to get sober, though?
I paroled in the end of 97.
97?
Yeah, and I paroled for I paroled, and I was out for about 10 months, and I'm going to say I was doing good in that I was only drinking like after work.
Yeah. Where were you working?
I was I installed fireplaces. I was a sheet metal worker.
You installed fireplaces?
Yeah, but you know the prefab, not the brick one, prefab ones?
Yeah, just working.
Yeah. And I was doing that and I would just drink after work. And then on the weekend, I would drink quite a bit and I would do coke sometimes with the cholo next door, this older cholo lived next door. And, but I was not hanging out with anybody. I was just, you know, like hanging out with my girlfriend who I live with and doing my thing. And eventually, you know how it goes. It's like, fuck, I was at my buddy's house and he was doing crank. And I was like, do you have any more of that? And he's like, fuck, you shouldn't be doing this. And I'm like,
all right.
And I did that. And then,
this is the exponential part of the story.
Yeah. I went on a 24-day run, okay, stopped doing speed and only drank and smoked weed for 6 days until I had to test so it would be clean. Gave the test, started doing speed again for 24 days, stopped, only drank and smoked weed for 6 days. And the morning of the fucking, I made it all 6 days. I was just short a few hours.
Yeah.
And I fucked up and started doing the speed. And when I went to or I didn't even go to test. I called my parole, or my parole officer called me. He goes, I know you're loaded. Do you want to run? You want me to catch you, or you want to turn yourself in? And I was kind of like, fuck, I'll turn myself in. Well, in the meantime, I'd been.
He asked you those questions?
Yeah. Swear to God. He told, the minute I got out, this is how it works. Just, you know, if anybody's listening, like, yeah. When you get out, it's not like the parole officer's not like trying to help you out. He's like, I got there and he goes, I'd been gone for 8 months or something. And he's like, all right, just so you know, it takes 6 days now to get methamphetamine out of your system, not three anymore, like cocaine. You know, they give you all the shit. So yeah. You know what you're dealing with. And there was also a guy at the Baldwin Park.
Because that's how they want the best for you? They're trying to give you a leg up?
Yeah, exactly.
Here's your leg up. 6 days it takes.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want it clean, six days. But that's what I mean. They don't give a fuck. It's a system, you know, designed to keep you in there. And if you have any kind of drinking or drug problem, you'll go back. But, and then for $110 bucks, the guy who picked up the piss test would swap your piss out.
Uh-huh.
Some cholo from Azusa told me that. So he knew the dude. And you could give him 100, so you could turn in a dirty. If you paid this dude $110 bucks, he'd swap him out.
Oh.
But, so I kept, my friend got out of prison. He was a very serious dude. I think you might have met him a long time ago with a thing, but he had gotten out and, you know, he'd been in prison for 11 years. So the speed thing happened while he was in there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was much bigger than the cocaine thing. It's like,
yeah, because cheap.
Yeah, it was cheap, and it's like, and fuck, you know, like, instead of being high for 20 minutes, you're high for 24 hours.
Yeah, days.
Days.
Yeah.
So he gets out, and he's a fucking hardened criminal, and dude, he literally, I swear to God, he looked at somebody else, like, going by, like, you know, some fucking dude on a three, like, an adult on a three-wheeled bicycle, you know, going down the street, and he looked at me, he's like, what the fuck is going on here? And I'm like, everybody's doing speed, you know, but I'm like, all fucking sweaty. Everybody's doing speed, you know, and he's like, but I kept robbing people, right? Like drug dealers. And I didn't.
When was this?
90.
Like after you're out?
Yeah.
Like,
I've been out 10 months.
While you're doing chimneys, you're robbing people?
Well, I couldn't show up for work anymore. You know how that goes.
Oh,
and,
right.
And I was just, so I was just in the speed mix. And
oh, for those 24-day peace periods?
Yeah, it wasn't that long. It was only, like I said, maybe 2 months that the run lasted, but. He had told me, because I was so out of control, you know, like scratching my nose and pulling my, like I look like that, if you watch the World Series, like that fucking Houston Astros coach, you know what I mean? Like where he's like pinching his nose, pulling his ear, all that. I was doing that all the time and sweaty.
Signaling Satan.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm coming in.
Exactly. Come home, Satan. That's exactly what the fuck I was doing. And fuck it. And I mean, I went to this house to sell these people. I'd been selling these people drugs. I got there, and this guy, Mark, I come in, and he just goes, Jesus Christ, man, you got to lay off of that shit. I mean, I'm selling it to him, and he's like, you are fucked
up. It's the worst.
And I feel like I'm being a service, you know, but he's bumming me out.
Who are you to judge me?
Yeah.
Here's your shit.
I'm the one with the money. Yeah. So then my buddy had told me, he goes, you ever thought about going into a program? And I hadn't. You know, we had friends who.
When you say you're robbing people, just houses?
Yeah, like this drug dealer couple had left this safe at this house. I cracked into the safe. Not like I'm a safe cracker. Let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
It's a pretty shitty, like, fireproof safe. Like, you could do it with a hammer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish it was that things. Glamorous.
Yeah.
But that kind of shit, and then, like, you know, not paying drug dealers. But I was doing it because I knew people knew how close him and I were.
Who? You and
my friend,
the 11-year, the hardened criminal?
Yeah, and everybody in the whole fucking San Gabriel Valley is scared of him. Yeah, for good fucking reason, you know? But it was just one of those things, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, where they're like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, it's like if I'm thinking like, man, I sure am fucking mad at you, Mark, but you're hanging out with this fucking Navy SEAL all the time. It's like the ghetto version of a Navy.
Sure,
you know?
Sure, yeah, but like the problem with that is as soon as that guy goes back to jail, you're fucked.
I'm fucked, yeah. Yeah. But you know, I'm on speed, so I'm just fucking winging it.
Right.
But they're complaining to him, and he asked me if I wanted to go to a program, and I said no, and he goes, you got to quit doing that shit. I said I would. Speed only.
Yeah.
He said he didn't care if I drank or smoked weed, but I was too scandalous. And he came to my, I told him I'd quit on a Thursday. He came to my house on a Friday. I was loaded, and then I walked in a dope. I knew I was in trouble, but I walked into a dope house later, and two guys from his neighborhood, they're cholos.
Yeah.
Two guys from his neighborhood just beat the fuck out of me. And like, I mean, I touched every wall of the living room. They robbed me. I got everything handed back to me. And then he showed up.
Your buddy.
Yeah. He goes, you ready to go into a program?
So this is his
that was my intervention.
Yeah.
all fucked up, like fucked up lip,
beat shit
loose teeth and shit. Yeah. And I went there, and I guess the end of 98. And then I was just like, that's a very easy place for me because I'm used to doing time and stuff. You know,
right.
Like, there's regiment. So it's really easy if you've been doing time. It's the ideal place.
Yeah.
You know.
And it worked?
It worked because it was like we were talking about earlier. Like I've always got on with you and people that laugh a lot, I get on good with.
Yeah.
I fucking stay dummy free. I don't fuck with anybody who's miserable or complaining about fucking shit all the time.
Because
I know where that's going to end up. And I don't want to be like that. You know?
Right. I mean, does that end up?
Loaded.
Oh,
you know,
oh
I think.
Right. I see what you're saying.
I mean, for me, it usually ends up back in prison. But
right. So you're saying that mindset of like, you know, I'm fucked or fuck that guy. Like if you don't process the resentments or work the steps enough to where you can't get out from under that shit, you got no options at some point.
For sure, yeah. And I think if you're not helping other people, I think you're fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's just what I've seen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but that's practical stuff.
Yeah.
It's simple stuff.
Yeah.
So you were never that guy, really, in recovery.
No. I mean, I'll do anything for anybody I can to help them get off drugs or alcohol. Anybody.
But
you
learned early on that is the ticket to staying sober.
Yeah, and I think it's a fairly easy one. You know, I mean, I'm sure you have too. We always have friends who like, it's a cult. I'm like, that's a cheap fucking cult. You know what I mean?
The best one I heard was that some guy, he told his sponsor that he was being brainwashed. And his sponsor says, well, maybe your brain needs washing. Yeah.
That's fucking true, though.
It is true.
You hear shit from new dudes like that. Like, there's these...
Who cares? The fucked up thing is, it's like, it is such... What I've learned over time is that, you know, all that shit is really just excuses.
Mm-hmm.
That when people say that's a disease talking, it clearly is. It's like, fine, you're right, it's a cult that costs no money at all, and you can do whatever the fuck you want it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, maybe you should find something else.
Well, also, because they're like, it's those dudes, you know, like, you hear, like, the dudes who are like that, you're like... And you know, you're like, fuck, man, 2 weeks ago you were sucking dicks for cocaine. You know what I mean? Like,
now you're mad that you're in a cult of sober people
because
they pray at the end. It's like, I never, but the fucked up thing, the people that really survive it, like if they're not too belligerent, you know, like I fought, it's like, I know there's a lot of things in the program I don't do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I fight it and I push back and I, you know, and I get, you know, for years I was just like, fuck this. I don't want to do this. But you also realize eventually it's like, well, the shit here I can use.
Yeah.
That's the best advice. Take what you can use, leave the rest, right?
Yeah.
And that's that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't work it perfectly or whatever. And you know what the fucked up thing is? It doesn't work for most people.
Yeah.
You know,
you're right about
and
that.
And that's just, like, there's no myth to it. And someone called me out on that recently in that, like, you should say that there's other ways to get sober. I don't care how you get sober. This just happened. I just went old school, you know, and that's just the way it worked out for me. But there's other ways to do it.
Yeah.
But the success rate on any of them, who knows long term? A lot of people come into AA and they realize that they were just, you know, that they just had a problem for a while. Fucking lucky them.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm just not that way. Because if I think about it now, it's like there's no reason not to just keep doing whatever it is.
Yeah.
like, you know what I mean? It's like, why would I start that if I wasn't going to finish?
It's still available.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. When you think like that, people like you and I, it's like, you know, like if something running out, that's not enough reason to stop. You know what I mean? Like, is no more. Hold on. There's got to be some more somewhere.
Or a new thing. Is there a new thing? Is there anything like it? Something similar some guy has?
Yeah.
All right, so how does it, so, you know, you're sober and I see you for years and you obviously you're doing the service and doing everything else, but how do you get from
prison to
wardrobe? Like, when I heard you were a wardrobe guy, I'm like, what? I don't know that guy at all.
Yeah, but
then I started to notice, like, he does dress pretty snappy.
Yeah. I started as a production assistant, which you can imagine, like, I mean, in coming where I'm from, you know, if you're from Covina, like, I made $175 a day on a flat.
On a flat?
Yeah. So, like, no overtime. This is in 99 or whatever, 2000. But I was also fresh in the program, so I was doing anything, whatever's in front of me.
And you just, like, you met someone in show business, and they told you this is a gig that's there can do?
Right. My friend's sister produced commercials or, you know, music videos. I started doing that. And then I'm like, and I've always been into, well, number one, like in the 80s, I was a punker, so I did a lot of thrift shopping. And then when I was doing speed, I've spent more than 8 hours at a single yard sale before. So I know, literally, I'm not.
So you were the guy that the people who owned the house were in the house going like, what's he doing?
Can we get him? Dude, one time we, fuck, so we pull up at this house. It's a Thursday.
Yeah.
The best I can explain it to you is.
It was a yard sale?
It was a yard sale, but on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And literally we pulled up in front of it, me and my friend Simone. And I, Mark, I, on my mother's eyes, I literally pulled up in front of there. I'm sweaty and high and shit. And I go, I literally was like, I am the luckiest man in the world because this is a Thursday yard sale. Nobody knows about it. I'm the only one here. And they get out and I start walk up. It's an old lady and like a little girl who's probably like 10. They're just sitting there chatting.
Yeah.
Start buying shit. And I mean, I am fucking sweaty and high. And I look and in the back, I'm always looking for like old Hawaiian shirts and shit. Yeah. I look in the back of the garage and there's a perlator hat like on a vise, right? A old vise, probably from the 50s.
Yeah.
And I look, and the old lady had told me she sold the house, and I go, her husband had passed away. I go, well, what about his vice? And she goes, I don't know. They'll probably just tear it down. I go, what? And she goes, they'll tear. I go, they can't fucking have his vice. I just got in that thing.
Yeah.
I buy like two pairs of pliers from her that are probably from the 60s.
Yeah.
Two pairs of pliers. And dude, I went back in that garage, and I was there for 6 hours fucking with everything I had taking that vase off with not even a wrench, the two pairs of pliers. Yeah. My friend Simone's like, can I take the car? I'm like, go ahead. Dude, he was gone.
Yeah.
I had to page him to come back and I got the whole vise off and just gave it to her and left. She was probably like, what the fuck is wrong? There's just sweat and sawdust everywhere, you know?
And you thought you'd like, you know, like I helped her out.
Yeah. I was like,
look what I did for you.
Isn't she lucky? Yeah. I was like, fuck, she's so lucky I came here.
You didn't even take the vise.
No. I bought the shirt off a dude's back at a yard sale another time.
So you were kind of, that was your thing?
Yeah.
You like shopping for stuff?
Yeah, I like costumes and
stuff. So you started as a PA, and then you were wardrobe PA?
I was a wardrobe PA, and then I became a, you know, like a costume, like a wardrobe assistant for probably 2 years, and then I became a, you know, costume designer and a stylist probably about a year later. But also it's like a lot of the principles that I'm just like, I don't complain. I'll do whatever they ask. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I was an assistant, I think I had a big advantage because there's not that many straight dudes who want to do it.
Yeah.
And you know, like if you're doing something with armor and shit, like you can carry a lot of that shit. So I worked all the time. And then then I became the boss, and I've been doing that for probably 17 years, I guess, now.
And you're in the union?
Yeah.
And it's great?
It's great.
You're always working?
Yeah, I work a lot. Yeah. I work more than most.
What gets you excited?
When
you have to do a production, like what do you sort of go like, oh, this is going to be fun to buy clothes for?
Period clothes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which period? Any of them?
60s, oh, 70s. Yeah. I don't mind doing like 20s and 30s, but they're not as exciting as like the 60s and 70s
so
and
when
early
you,
80s.
Well, when you get that stuff, are there just like, are there places that have that shit? You just rent most of it, or how does it work?
Yeah, we rent, there's a place in the valley that has a great like Western and period. And then Western costume itself, there's Western Costume United American. They have like all this vintage stuff. But I think like, you know, when you were in the Joker, because I know Mark Bridges did that, who was pretty phenomenal.
It was in Brooklyn.
Oh, was it in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
But I feel like he might have made all your guys' stuff.
Oh, yeah?
I think so.
Like, is he a big dude?
Yeah.
Yeah, I met that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy with a beard, I think.
Or,
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, he's very thoughtful.
But, like, in that case, I think he made all your guys' stuff.
Oh, he did?
Well, because, you know, it's like...
I don't know. I tried on a couple of suits. Maybe not for my part. You know, maybe for the leads.
Yeah.
But I remember there was a couple of options, and, you know, I don't know. I didn't get the feeling that... He made them.
He definitely made the Joker, obviously,
sure. Yeah.
That one. But I don't. I just assumed he did because it's shot in Brooklyn. There's not a lot of stuff to rent in New York. I mean, you can rent it from here. Maybe he did that and took it out there.
Yeah, yeah. I just remember there was a few options, and they seemed like fairly classic stuff.
Yeah. There's a lot of it around.
That period, I would think. What was
not
that?
For fat dudes, though. You know, are real big guys. Like, if you're like 6'5 or something.
Right.
There's not much at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For big...
And then you just got to get it made?
You have to make it, yeah.
So you want to you like staying in commercials? You want to do features or what?
I want to do features and stuff, yeah.
How do you get into that thing?
I think somebody that, you know, you're doing a commercial with is ideally doing, you know what I mean?
He goes on to make a feature and
yeah.
Say, I like working with that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, my buddy does like a bunch of TV, you know, Jody. He does like Eastbound and Down and all that. And
oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to go do something with him. He's great, you know.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are fun.
They're fucking great, yeah.
Well, I'm glad that we've, you know, our hobbies are different
now.
I think we're better off. Well, I'm glad. So the podcast is just sort of a, what is it? You like doing it.
Well, we're always telling stories. I mean, you and I have told stories. And I love stories. And I also, because I hear shit.
You know, it's like demon fellowship.
Yeah. but I also like that it's like, everybody we've had on everything, everybody has a story and they're pretty funny. There's a great one you got to listen to with Blackie from Urge Overkill. Did you hear that one?
No.
You got to listen to that one. It's the drummer from Urge Overkill.
I kind of remember.
He told this fucking pretty heavy ghost story that's insane. And
I moved a chair with my mind on blow.
No way.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
I'm pretty sure. It's a lot of energy coming off of me. I remember remembering it.
Dude, that's amazing. They went to Stull, Kansas.
Yeah.
Which is...
With the band? With Urge?
It was like them and they were touring with Nirvana. They were opening for Nirvana.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were playing in like, I can't remember, some big town in Kansas, but it was Halloween, so they decided to go out there.
Yeah.
And dude, he said it was like a fucking Twilight Zone movie. Like the fucking townspeople were staring at him and shit. And
I bet.
The van move, all this crazy shit. Yeah. But so I like doing it because I also think, I hope people get a laugh out of it, but I also hope people it's a deterrent for, you know, because like me and Danny, like a lot of us, you know, ended up in jail a lot of times behind it. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like most of the people that I've been in prison with that are doing life in prison, most of them are fucked up when they do something to get life in prison. You know what I mean?
Like
some guy's hammered and walks in a house and kills everybody or drunk driving and kills somebody doing that. It's almost always alcohol, you know?
Wow. Well, yeah. Well, I hope that's the way it works.
Yeah.
If you guys don't make it sound too fun.
Yeah. It's funny now. It wasn't that fun at the time, you know? I realized, there's a lot. I'm sure the same for you. A lot of years, it wasn't that fun, you know?
I don't know, man. Like, I just remember one time, I was in that hotel room here, and I was taking, I think I was on some sort of antidepressant. I think I was on Wellbutrin or something.
Ooh.
And I was doing blow, and I was laying in the bed, and there was no way I was sleeping, and I'd taken a few Ambien to try to get to sleep, and my arm started doing that like CP thing, like the palsy thing, like it started curling in, and I couldn't uncurl it.
Uh-huh.
And there's that moment where you're like, I'm just gonna ride this out. But there's nothing.
Because you're a doctor?
Yeah. There's nothing fun about I hope this doesn't stick.
Yeah.
You know, in just those moments where you're laying in bed, you know, and you're alone and you're just about to just die.
Yeah.
It's the fucking, it's horrendous. And that's most of it.
That's the majority of it.
Yeah.
It's not I always say it was fun in the beginning, but when you end up with shit like that, you know, when you think that there's no fucking way you or I should give ourselves or anyone else medical advice.
No.
And you look at your arm, which could have, I would have thought.
I was having a seizure or
something. Yeah, or a stroke or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but that's where, you know, you get where you think oh, I'll be okay.
Oh, let's be grateful for a minute that we're not living that life anymore. So it's called, it's all bad.
It's all bad,
And I'm glad you survived. It was great talking to you and thanks for doing it. And, you know. People will maybe go listen to to the pirates laughing.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
Yeah, buddy.
It's awesome. Thank you.
There you go. Keith's podcast. It's all bad. You can get it wherever you get podcasts. All right. All right. Happy Thanksgiving. All right. Okay. That was a different time. It was a different time when I started this episode. Remember back then? About 20 minutes ago, it's a different time then. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.